Welcome to Think Global, Do Justice, a podcast for globally minded disciples seeking God's justice, mercy, and shalom throughout the world. We're glad you're here.
Welcome back to Think Global, Do Justice. I'm Phil Dark, your host, and with me is my brother, my co-host, Brandon Stiver, and we have another 3+1 episode for you. So, Brandon, what do we got going on today, man?
Well, we got a lot going on. I'm trying to keep my head on straight. I just got back from back-to-back conferences, so I'm nice. Just like, and then we just hit the ground running. Normally, we're releasing these on the last Friday of the month. We'll see if we keep doing that or we do something else. This is actually going to come out on Tuesday. And part of that's just my problem because I was going to some cool conferences. I got to go to Exiles in Babylon with our friend that nice. Was on the show a few weeks ago, Preston Sprinkle. And that was awesome. Tiffany Bloom also spoke, who's been on the podcast before, and some others. So friends of the show. It was great. They do such a good job with their topics and all that. So. And then I turned around. I had less than 24 hours back here in Tacoma and then went to the Care Portal conference in Kansas City.
Nice.
And you know who spoke at that?
Nope.
You don't know because you don't always, I don't know if you listen in post after we produce it. Because I was promoting the conference and Andy Crouch spoke, dude.
Oh, nice.
He's the best.
Did you hang out with Andy? He's amazing. He's one of my favorite men in the world. I love that guy. And he's like insane musician, like great guy. He'll sit down for hours and we've had some great conversations. I love that dude.
Yeah.
He's one of the greatest thinkers of our time. I'm convinced. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If people go back into the annals of the podcast, they will see an episode that Phil did with Andy Crouch a while back. But he is as advertised. I've read a couple of his books and then they gave away a book which has been out for a while. And I think it's actually, it might have been the one that you discussed with him, Strong and Weak.
Yeah. Yep. So it is. Episode 19.
He went through the quadrants of
20 or 19. One of them back in the day.
Just search Andy.
Way Crouch. Back when we were Think Orphan.
Back when we were just focused on Orphan Care. But then we would get people like Andy Crouch that isn't necessarily involved in Orphan Care.
No. And that but it's, say. That's why, you know, we haven't really changed. We just changed the name, you know. But you know, the crazy thing about Andy, there is 3+1 episode is one of those changes, but, I will say you know, I would love to be a fly on the wall in that house because they do like string quartets in their house. They have his wife is an astrophysicist. So like, could you imagine those conversations, Andy, with, you know, his wife, who is an astrophysicist, and then their kids who are like playing violin in the background. Like, that'd be crazy. That'd be just crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if that happens, but that's how I picture it in their house.
That's a very classy picture.
Yes.
And it could be that. It could also just be incredibly mundane.
It could be. It could be totally boring.
Drink coffee and talk about what they watched on Netflix, like the rest of us.
That's not nearly as fun, though. That's not.
No, it's not as fun. But anyways, Andy Crouch was awesome. All the speakers at Exiles in Babylon were awesome as well. And speaking of awesome speakers, as we do with our 3+1 episodes, we're wrapping in a friend. So Amanda, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Thanks. I'm so glad to be here.
Amanda, you want to take a second just to introduce yourself to our audience and your own background within kind of the global development space?
Sure. Yeah. So hi, everyone. I'm Amanda Earn. I currently work for an organization called World Concern up in Seattle, Washington, and my career has been in global development, specifically in financial inclusion and also agriculture. So microfinance, savings groups, regenerative agriculture, that's my bread and butter. I worked for many years for an organization called Hope International, and some of that time was overseas. I lived in Rwanda almost 4 years. And then moved back to the States for grad school, and now we're here.
I love it. Well, Hope International is obviously an organization that we featured multiple times on the podcast. And I actually met Amanda when our buddy Peter Greer was here in the area doing a show. And he is a Root for Rivals and collaborative kind of guy. So he said, who can I wrap in from the greater Seattle area? And he just hit me up on LinkedIn and said, Brandon, do you want to come to this lunch? And I told my wife, I was like, hey, Peter Greer wants me to come hang out with him. Can I go? And she's like, yeah, go. And then I met Amanda, who had been on staff with them for a while. But Peter's awesome. A great guy. And World Concern, your current org, is such a great organization as well. Just ton of respect for all the work that they do and your expertise. Our listeners are aware that we are in the early stages of this coaching collaborative at Canopy International, of which Amanda is an associate and just brings so much skills. We're going to talk about climate today. We're going to talk about sustainable agriculture. These are all areas that she has a tremendous amount of skill and expertise in, as well as microfinance and just various things. So Amanda, great to collaborate with you, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, as we are doing, I just want to give do our monthly shout outs. Phil, you good if I do a couple monthly shout outs?
Of course, man.
Well, we've collaborated at various points with a university that's very near and dear to my heart, but I wanted to share, you know, a global development and justice program at Multnomah has just been a big supporter and sharing within their networks about, you know, what we're doing over here on Think Global, Do Justice. So definitely want to give a shout out to them. And of course, you know, just on social media, our friends at Think Global, Do Justice have come out with some great episodes recently, including Eugene Cho and the most recent featuring our very own Dr. Karen Fancher. So thank you for that shout out from our friends at Multnomah University. And also want to give a shout out to a sponsor that we have for a couple shows here in April, and that's Child Hope International. We have had Spencer Reeves on the show a couple times. He is the executive director there, and they do just tremendous, tremendous work. This is an organization that I've gotten to go deep with over the years, and they are class act, and they are operating in a context that we have discussed repeatedly, including in the March 3+1 that we did with Mac, where we were talking about Haiti. And, you know, they're serving in a very tough spot. So we want to give a shout out to our partners over at Child Hope International. Would encourage you guys go to the show notes, check out what Child Hope is doing, consider giving, and definitely reach out if you're looking for support, technical support in the nation of Haiti. They're a great organization to connect with. So, thank you to our podcast listening community. Let's jump into our stories for our April 3+1. I did feel a little bit bad because we tend to somehow, I don't know, maybe because he's just such a gentleman, we have Phil go last, and but then we don't spend as much time. But Phil, you had passed along a story that I've actually been thinking through quite a bit. It touches on a lot of the themes that we get into, not only looking at international affairs, but also economy. So Phil, why don't you share with us the article that you're bringing and where is it from and what's it saying?
Yeah, for sure. Before I do that though, I do want to mention, because we did mention Peter and Spencer both, little fun fact about both of them. They're both soccer guys. So, you know, and so anyway, just thought I'd throw that out. And they are two of, you know, they're two great men as well. And I will say, you know, we talked about Andy and I just gushed, and I could gush over those guys for just as long, just for the record. Anyway, that has nothing to do with the article. The article is an Al Jazeera article. So you brought, I think, had the last episode had an Al Jazeera article as well. It's called Parallel Economy: How Russia is Defying the West's Boycott. And it talks all about how, I strongly recommend reading this article. It'll give you so much insight into it. It's a longer article, but the gist of it is there are, you know, sanctions against Russia on the business side of things. A lot of companies, 1,400 companies, 1,400 companies have basically pulled out, say, we're not selling our products in Russia. But there's these parallel markets, these parallel channels that are coming in, parallel imports, and Russia has legalized parallel imports. It's basically coming in not directly from the manufacturer through a, you know, end around, so to speak, is the best way to put it in my lingo. And they're going through other countries and they can come in. And so people are like, I want an Apple Watch. And they can't just go to apple.com and buy an Apple Watch. So they go through a, you know, think of it not black market because it's legalized in Russia, but that idea, right? You know, it's a third party seller that will sell them an Apple Watch in Russia. And so it's basically completely undoing the sanctions for all intents and purposes. Now, they will run out at some point, and at some point maybe the companies will get wise to it, and they're going to feel pressures from the outside, and it's talking a lot about those things as well. But the interesting thing, the most interesting thing for me was the unintended consequences, the secondary consequences that happened through this. And they're saying, well, if we take away these third-party markets, if we take away the ability for people to sell these things in the country, these people may go and become part of the war. They may have to go be part of the army. The other aspect of it is, you know, you'll take away jobs. And so you'll cause people, other issues. You know, they were talking about bars trying to get the alcohol. They're going to have to get cheaper, worse alcohol. You know, people aren't able to, you know, they're not going to be able to have the quality that they want in these different things. Now, some people are like, well, that's a good thing. But the
other, doesn't Russia have the best vodka anyways?
You know, they very well may. I am not a big vodka guy, but that is what I've heard as well. Then the other part of it is, you know, a lot of it is we're punishing the citizens who really are against the war, a lot of them. And so, you know, how does that debate is there, you know, how, like, even the going to athletes, you don't see their, you know, the Russia flag, they're allowed to compete now, but for a while their athletes weren't allowed to compete. So it's similar issues of, you know, what is the right? So there's so many issues that go into this one thing. And so that's why I really like this article. You know, I could go more into it, but I encourage you to go read that article, and I would love to hear what you guys have to think about it. I know, Brandon, you said you've been talking and thinking about it. And so, you've probably been thinking about it longer than I have. But as I've been reading this, it was really, really interesting.
Yeah, I have given it thought. And just to remind our listeners, as we list off these different articles and then the resource at the end, definitely check out the show notes, because then you will be able to tap into those and read for yourself. I have been thinking about it. You know, people... You know, the war in Ukraine has been going on for over 2 years now. I remember when we had our friend Ruslan Malusha on the show right when it broke. And one of the things I noticed right away was gas is already expensive in Washington State, and gas went up immediately. And I remember my wife texting me and saying, I just paid this much money for gas. And my response was, hey, this is a small thing that we do to support, you know, the Ukrainians, right? And when they said, hey, these are the economic sanctions, it's going to cripple, you know, the state of Russia. I think there was a lot of ambition that because they were such aggressive sanctions that they were going to make a difference. And yet, in this globalized economy, there are workarounds. There are ways that people are getting around them. Right off the bat, I mean, we've already heard it. That you kind of create like this axis of, I don't want to say axis of evil, but like, you know, that type of like, you create this alternate axis of countries even. So what are other countries that that are, you know, having, you know, these types of authoritarian or kind of main, you know, big thing. So it's like, so who does Russia get into economic agreements with? North Korea. Yeah, they got a bunch of their shells from North Korea.
Yep.
Who else? They started to trade with Myanmar, right? Mm-hmm. And they had a coup not too long ago. So they start to create these kind of axes where they can go to other people that, you know, and other countries that are willing to trade with them, right?
That's right.
And so that's a whole other component. And then the other thing that you're talking about in terms of like getting it from third parties or smuggling, this dynamic is something that is age old. You know, I think even in terms of, like East Africa. So Amanda, you were in Rwanda for some time. Rwanda has exports a crazy amount of precious metals that are kind of like magic metals because they don't actually have the mines. Where are they coming from? They're coming from Eastern Congo. And because there's sanctions on Eastern Congo, and then those precious metals that end up in our phones and stuff, they get smuggled into Rwanda, and it's like, magic. Oh my goodness. Actually, all of this is from Rwanda. It's not from Rwanda. Okay. So anyways, so these types of, yeah, exactly. How did it get there? So, so these economic things, like I appreciate the desire to leverage, you know, the global economy to, as a nonviolent way of sanctioning, you know, bad actors. But we also have to come to grips with the fact that there are workarounds. And that's what your article is sharing about. Amanda, what kind of sticks out to you in this topic?
Yeah, in the very beginning of the article, it talks about how when there was apartheid in South Africa, there were really heavy sanctions. And that is partially credited for ending apartheid. There's just this collective economic pressure that happens. And I was just thinking about how much the world has changed since that point and mm-hmm. how much more accessible, you know, the article even talks about this. It starts with this woman who's going on, a Russian woman who's going on vacation to Italy. And so she's like planning, okay, well, while I'm in Italy, I'll be able to get these things I can't get in Russia. And in her research on prices and things, she realizes, wait a second, I can get all of these things in Russia. And just the fact that, you know, she's, that average people are able to leave their country and return by plane. The fact that there's a website similar to Amazon that she's looking on and finding these Apple Watches, like all of these different components are very different than how things were in the 80s and 90s. And the effectiveness of political tools has changed and has rapidly evolved. And I think we haven't totally figured out, like Brandon, you brought up a good point. This is a nonviolent way to shape policy, and yet maybe it's not as effective anymore. And I don't know, I don't have a great alternative, but what do we do now that the world has changed so much?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. Like it lacks teeth, right? Mm-hmm. When you have the internet, when you have the ability to go sell, when you have the dark web, when you have these other things that are going on, it is a completely different world. And so, you know, there does need to be more creativity. There does need to be more, thought into what we do. And because otherwise it's just, you know, it's like you're saying, you're saying to your, to Putin, like, hey, we're going to do all these things. And he's like, so? Right. Like, kid, we all know that we have, you know, at least one. Everyone has at least one kid who you try to discipline. And they're like, is that all you got?
Right.
You know, I'm just going to keep it right on doing what I'm doing, you know? And I think that that's kind of what's going on a lot of the time. And you see that. You see that in the actions, right? It hasn't changed anything.
Yeah, in some regards, it kind of comes back to this technology question that we've touched on from time to time, where we have technology. So we're saying like, okay, well, you can't use that site, but you can use this site. Mm-hmm. You know, like there is this component where we are not able to keep up with technology. And even when we look at that question domestically, you know, when it comes to regulation, even with stuff with AI, and people talk a lot about AI, and that's not what this article is about, but it's the same kind of thing where it's progressing so fast, but because there aren't any regulatory things, and to be honest, sometimes the government like doesn't want there to be, right? They don't want there to be because they look at it from a competition standpoint, where it's like, well, if we regulate it, then our rivals are going to kind of overtake us, right? Even when we talk about, you know, conflict in Eastern Congo, and then it actually benefits them that the conflict is there, and that because then they can get unregulated, you know, materials out of the country. It actually enables that. So sometimes even the conflict itself, or sometimes the lack of policy that governs these types of issues, actually enable the economy that the people are going for. And I think that, oh my goodness, you know, it's like you sometimes wonder, like, why did Jesus talk about mammon so much? I was just like, oh, okay. Like even at the meta scale, you know, it's like the big dollar, you know, that's king, you know, or mm-hmm. what is it? What is it in ruples? No. Is that what it is?
That's right.
Yeah, ruples. Yeah. Russia. Yeah. 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 The ruble is king, you know, but you kind of realize, wow, okay, this economy thing is pretty substantial.
Oh yeah. It's massive.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on this article?
I just think that one of the things I talked about is the article also talked about the big winner in a lot of it is China, because they're now, you know, going to China. And, you know, you talk about economy and how the economy, China's economy, they basically, you know, hold all the debt that we have. And when you start looking at power, you know, it doesn't take too long to realize, oh, okay, there's some issues when China is the one that kind of holds the purse strings. Yeah. So anyway, that's a whole different, that's a whole different longer conversation, but it is interesting, you know, when we look at it, that you say the sanctions, what's the unintended consequence of it? It could be that China gets even stronger in the midst of it.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that question around China and Western involvement in terms of who's the leader, you know, that's not a Christian thing, but that's a geopolitical thing. Mm-hmm. You know, who's the leader, that has overtones across global development spaces.
Yep.
You know, in various sectors, healthcare, economic development, and so forth. So yeah, that's really substantial. All right, Amanda, you're up next. What do you got for us?
Yeah. So my article is called "Beneath the Surface: A Toxic Tide Threatens Bangladesh's Water Lifeline." It's put out by an organization called Manga Bay, and they're a nonprofit based out of California that reports on environmental issues. And I'll just read, they summarize the article really well at the top, so I'll read that and then we can get into it. Despite widespread water access, millions in Bangladesh lack safe drinking water due to contamination by arsenic, salinity, and heavy metals, as unveiled by the nation's first comprehensive report on groundwater quality assessment. Depletion of groundwater, driven by irrigation and exacerbated by climate change, intensifies contamination, particularly affecting coastal areas, with saltwater intrusion and surpassing safe limits in certain regions. Freshwater pockets and deep aquifers do provide temporary relief, but experts emphasize that long-term strategies are imperative to address the problem in coastal districts. The Bangladeshi government's commitment to water issues is evident, but urgent global cooperation, improved infrastructure, and data-driven solutions are essential for ensuring safe water access nationwide. Yeah, so I chose this article. I just got back from Bangladesh a couple weeks ago on a work trip. And I chose this article because I think it captures a lot of the complex impacts of climate change and our response to it. And yeah, there's just so many different layers to this. For a long time, access to drinkable water was a big challenge in Bangladesh. That has improved significantly, but along with the access, the water that is available has these really high levels of arsenic, which a lot of groundwater has arsenic. In fact, I think all groundwater has some level, but you know, it's reaching these levels that are causing cancer and other health issues for folks. And at the same time, a lot of the southern region of Bangladesh is deeply impacted by changes in sea levels, and that is increasing the salt that is present, both for irrigation of agricultural fields and then what people have access to for drinking water and bathing and all these things. And yeah, while I was in Bangladesh, I saw a lot of the resilience and creativity of farmers as they're adapting to very arsenic-laced, very saline, salty water, and how they're swapping out what crops they use and what varieties of rice and how they irrigate and all these things. But I do think it points out a problem that is too big for individual farmers to solve or individual community members who are just trying to get clean water for their family. This is an all of us problem that we have to figure out, because Bangladesh is one of the most densely populated countries in the world. And so I think as development practitioners and as Christians, if we care about the well-being of humanity, here's a big chunk of humans who are deeply impacted by such a vital resource being contaminated.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's whenever we talk about water, I get this picture in my head of when we were living in Tanzania and there was one roundabout, or as we call it in Swahili, kipi lefty, which is
I love it.
We do write on the website.
That is amazing. Yep. I'm calling it that from now on. That's be amazing. Lefty. I love it.
But in the US it would be keepy righty.
I know, but I'm still
don't follow that advice here. Yeah, problems. Exactly.
But in the center of this roundabout, there's an image of a soldier, which I actually don't know the correlation there, but then it says Maji ni Uhai, which is just Swahili for water is life. And you realize we actually have Dave Levan coming back on the show from Life Water / Water for Good. And we're going to be talking about this in one of our upcoming episodes, talking about water, you know, access to water and so forth. One of the things that you're describing, Amanda, is along the lines of, hey, actually infrastructure has improved, you know, there is greater access, and yet there is this, you know, degradation of the water source or whatever that's leading to these unhealthy levels. I mean, what are your kind of thoughts? Like, as you read this, is this a policy issue? Is this a community development issue? Like, how would you kind of say, like, hey, this is what's going on in Bangladesh. It is a huge need, especially considering, you know, how densely populated it is and the tremendous effect that it has. I mean, what are your thoughts, you know, in kind of like thinking through it?
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you asked, because I have the perfect solution and we can just implement it for $1 tomorrow.
We always do. We always do.
It'll all be fixed. No. I think I raised the article because I think even in the article itself, they'll summarize it. We need global cooperation. And I think, where do I want to go with this? I think there are policy things that are already happening. The Bangladeshi government is working hard to address the fact that there's these deep tube wells that are bringing water up from the water table, and that's where a lot of the salinity is, the arsenic is coming from. And so there's policy going into place and government emphasis as to where they put funds that's going into place to try and address, okay, how do we know this aspect of things will exacerbate the problem down the road. So how do we provide for people today and also pivot so that we have something more sustainable for tomorrow? So I think there's policy happening already in country. But I think it points to a need for global cooperation. Being someone who cares about the climate space, has worked in agriculture and climate, I spend a lot of time thinking about, like, what are effective things that average people can do? You know, folks who are not not research scientists publishing articles, and maybe not farmers trying to implement climate smart agriculture techniques on their own farm, but what are things that the rest of us can do when that's not our day job? And I read some compelling stuff about the best thing that we can do as average people about climate change is to talk about climate change. Because the more that an issue gets talked about, the more pressure there is for kind of global cooperation and more emphasis. And I have certainly seen in my own lifetime the conversation shift from, oh, that's just what hippies believe, to a lot more collective understanding of, wait a second, yeah, certainly there is impact that we're having on the environment. And wow, I'm noticing that in my own backyard. And oh, you know, other folks are experiencing that, you know, my cousins who live in another state, and well, I heard about this person overseas who's experiencing these impacts. And so I think kind of that's good. Destigmatizing discussions about climate change, I think particularly in the Christian space, in Christian community, we can talk about, it fits pretty neatly even in our understanding of the world.
100%. And especially for global development practitioners, we cannot not talk about it, right? We have to, because it affects everything. I mean, you can say pretty much all of this affects everything. Like, we have a upcoming conversation on global health, like that affects everyone. But all of these things are also tied back to the environment in which we live. We talk about economic development. Well, a lot of economic development has kind of come at the cost of our ecology sometimes, you know? Yes. All of these intersections are really significant. Phil, what are your thoughts, man? What kind of comes to mind as we think through this?
Yeah. Even as we're reading these articles and talking about it, and even just listening to this conversation, I think there's probably a lot of people, you know, in this world, when they hear climate change, they just shut off completely. And I think for good reason in our society, because it's become so politicalized, politicized, right? It is a term that people have. It cuts off conversation because unless you agree with the person, right? And I think we do that in the church. We do that in the space of most of our advocacy work, right? We have these terms that are shortcut terms that I think do a disservice to the conversation. And so in this particular instance, like you talk about arsenic in the water and you were like, that's a problem we need to deal with. As Christians, we need to be stewards of the environment. So how can we steward the environment? How can we steward these situations? And if you talk to any Christian, you're like, hey, we need to get clean water to people around the world. Everyone's going to agree on that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like, yes, let's go after it. Let's go. Conservative, liberal, it doesn't matter, right? But when you say, hey, we got to deal with these climate change issues, whoa, everyone's like, I'm over here, we're done, right?
Yeah.
And I think I've heard so many, I've been to so many conferences, and I've been to conservative conferences, I've been to liberal conferences, I've been to ones that it's not anything. And when you have someone that talks very well about stewarding the environment and our role as believers to steward the environment, you don't hear anyone in that room arguing with that person, because we are here to make all things new.
Yeah,
right. I love that idea of just, hey, how can we have these conversations? And let's talk about what we can do with these situations, and to know that, you know, there are things that are changing, whether you believe it's changing because of cyclical issues, whether you believe it's changing because we're doing different things in the environment. The fact is we're doing things that aren't the best stewards of what we have. And I would say that monetarily, I'd say that, you know, environmentally, I'd say that in every area of our life. How can we be better stewards of what God has given us, including the environment? Let's not say, well, that's not what I'm going to do because I don't want to, you know, make these climate change activists.
I have the agenda.
Right? You know what I'm saying? Like, because I think that goes to a lot of issues that if we were to just take a step back and go, hey, what's the real issue here? Let's have a conversation about that. And that's something that I think is really important, because these are really important issues. And when you travel the world, you see them all over the place, that there are issues, and whatever the cause, now we have an issue that let's address and say, what are these things we can be doing as brothers and sisters in Christ, as people who are just common good advocates, which every Christian should be. What does that look like? So anyway, that's my thought.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Child Hope International. Child Hope has been serving children in Haiti for 20 years. Family reunification has been a regular theme on our podcast, and Child Hope is actively reuniting families by creating pathways for children in orphanages to return home and get the necessary support to thrive. They actively support orphanages that are looking to transition to family care in Haiti. You won't find a more challenging context right now than Haiti, and with so many children that have been separated from their families in orphanages, you need a guide, and Child Hope has been that to so many practitioners, and they do it through Christ-centered care, training, resources, and social work. If you are needing support for your orphanage transition, or if you have a heart to donate to good work in Haiti, I invite you to reach out to Child Hope International. Just follow the link in our show notes or visit childhope.org. Restoring families, restoring hope. Child Hope International.
Well, yeah, no, and I think you stated it well when things are overly politicized. And if it fits into one person's platform and not somebody else, then they reject the platform out of hand. And that is a problem, especially when we do. Again, we're talking about an issue that literally affects everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I remember we talked, you guys will remember, if you want to continue that climate change or, you know, creation care conversation, our conversation earlier this year with Dr. Forrest Inslee from Northwest University, we definitely dove into this quite a bit. And, you know, at the end of the day, we are called to be stewards. That's part of our Genesis mandate. And and we scientifically can learn, you know, what things are helpful, what things aren't. This is a good story. Actually, I have another story. So knowing that we had Amanda coming on the show today, I also kind of wanted to circle back on the climate change thing. And I would even just say to our listeners, hey, if you know somebody that, you know, can walk through, you know, climate change in a given area or a Christian response, similar to what we did with Dr. Inslee, hey, reach out to us. We're always looking for people to be conversation partners, because this is a topic, as Amanda said, that we want to be talking about so that other people can also, you know, be aware. And then, you know, we can push towards collective action to be better stewards, as Phil said. So along those lines, I also grabbed a conversation. So this is in Beirut. Okay, so now we're going to the Middle East. Where can you hide from pollution? That's the title. Cancer rises 30% in Beirut as diesel generators poison city. When I was in Kigali for my residency, I did not hear generators. You lived in Rwanda. Were generators common there, Amanda?
No, not very common.
Well, in Tanzania, they were. We would get periodic times where the lights would go out, and then you would know who had a little bit of money because then the generators would turn on and you hear it kick on. And sometimes they'd be running for hours on end, potentially, if the power was out for that long, at least in Moshi. So I'm trying to envision what is going on in Beirut as there has just been a tremendous amount. So smog hangs over Beirut most days, a brownish cloud that darkens the city's skyline of minarets and concrete towers. Get this, an estimated 8,000 diesel generators have been powering Lebanese cities since the nation's economic collapse in 2019. The generators can be heard, smelled, and seen on the streets, but their worst impact is on the air the city's inhabitants are forced to breathe. New research to be published by scientists at American University of Beirut has found that Lebanese capital's over-reliance on the diesel generators in the past 5 years has directly doubled the risk of developing cancer. Rates of positive diagnosis, oncologists say, are shooting up. So the article continues on to say generators are used to fill a 3-hour gap in national grid provision. So I don't know if you guys remember, there was this explosion that took place in August 2020 in Beirut. Do you guys remember this story? I know we have like a 24-hour news cycle, so it goes away as quick as it came in. Do you guys remember this story?
That might be in the 2020 warp, in which yes, nothing is right, remembered
that's true.
For me.
That's true. Yes, we were all in lockdown in August 2020. Fair. Phil, does that ring a bell? Do you remember this a little bit?
Yeah, I have a good friend who works with Hearts for Lebanon. So yeah.
Okay. So there you go. So you had a connection to that area. So it killed more than 200 people, mm-hmm. and it devastated Beirut's commercial port. Yep. And it was, it was kind of like this, this moment where it was like, oh my gosh, you know, and it was basically the explosion was caused by consignment of ammonium nitrate. I'm just reading from this, according to officials, which had been in Beirut's port for years, but the origin of that, they don't actually know, but it killed more than 200 people and injured more than 6,500. But it was just all of this kind of stems out of this kind of breakdown in infrastructure from the 2019 economic impact of the collapse. So money is, so now it's leading again. So we were just talking in Amanda's article, about climate change. And what we're saying is, look, all of these things are connected, right? So we have economic collapse, which then leads to pollution, right? That's like the first word in this article. And then what is that leading to now? Increases in cancer, right? So they say money and then what does that do? It feeds back into the economic challenges that people are facing, right? So when we talk about cancer patients, it says that money is the biggest problem facing cancer patients in Lebanon. The crisis has wreaked chaos. The average public sector salary is about $150 a month, far below the cost of chemotherapy. I think they were saying chemotherapy is like $600 a month. So it's like four times just what somebody makes, right? So the billions of dollars pumped into Lebanon by various international donors for infrastructure projects have not corrected the most basic issues. She says, there is still no clean air, water, or soil. There is nothing to show for any of it. So this is another one of those kind of like, we see this kind of vicious cycle, right? Where you see economic impact, economic collapse.
An unvirtuous circle. One thing drags the next thing down and drags the next thing down. And then here you are. Yeah. With no money, with no clean air, no health. Yeah.
That's, right.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we can even go even further. I mean, we're talking Lebanon. Well, who else is in Lebanon? Hezbollah, you know? Yeah. So it's like, oh, okay, now we have all this tension in that region of the world as well. You know, it's like one of those things where it's like, man, if we threw conflict on top of all of these other issues, it's a little bit of a tinderbox. So this is just one of those things, you know, we want to be looking for solutions. We also want to be praying, of course. But as I was, you know, going through this specific article, you know, it does highlight, you know, the need for a different grid. And I don't even know what that where that comes from necessarily, because even when we look at international aid, it's even saying, look, international donors have given billions towards this and the infrastructure still isn't there. And they're still running all of these generators. So, I don't want to err on the side of hopelessness or anything. That's never what we want to do, but it's just one of those things, this kind of vicious cycle that we're seeing. So I don't know, anything kind of jump out to you guys, either on the pollution front or on the economy front or any of that?
Well, I really liked something that you did a minute ago, which was to find the common ground, where you talked about, as Christians, we all know that we should care about stewardship. And so reframing the conversation about climate in terms of stewardship, I think I'd push back a little bit on like taking climate change as a term totally out, because I do think it will help us move forward to just get on board with that term. But I think this is a great example of a need for stewardship for air, and we see the trickle down impact. And yeah, I don't know. I don't have a lot of great, here's a next step forward, but it is interesting to think about how do we as development practitioners, or we as individuals in the minority world, support stewardship in other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good word. Yeah. And it is one of those, I think the main thing is we realize with certain terms, you know, sometimes it's like, are we redeeming this term, or, you know, because it's just a descriptor is what it is, you know, and whatever, there's various causes. But anyways, I think that that's significant. And yeah, I don't know, Phil, anything kind of stick out to you as we kind of like look at Lebanon as another example where pollution is just kind of making things worse, which was making other things worse and so forth?
I grew up in, and you know it well too, the Southern California pollution, right? And how different things in California, it's not as bad as it used to be. And I don't know exactly what one thing or two things or 20 things or 5,000 things changed it. But I know our gas prices, you talk about gas prices, that's one thing that's definitely been affected. But that's a whole different conversation. So I would say, I think just... You know, we talk so much on this podcast, as we always have, the interconnectedness of everything, right? You can't just take one thing out and say, oh, well, let's take care of this and we're done. You know, it's like, no, there's so many things that go into it. There's no silver bullet. There's no one thing that's going to solve it. And on the other side, there's no one cause that caused everything. But there are things that we could take out. There are things that we could do that would take care, you know, a lot of things like we talk about. If we could just do the simple thing of discipling males to be godly men, we could deal with a lot of the issues in the world, right? But that's a big if, right? You know, that's not like that's easy, no problem. Why didn't we think of that before, right? And it's the same thing with like, okay, we can say, let's just take away all these generators and the diesel power generator. Well, okay, what's the alternative? Right. Because
they need power.
Right. What's the other? What's right. The other thing we can do? Right. It's like, well, why don't we just build wells everywhere to get clean water? Like, what? Why haven't we thought of that one? You know. But there's other issues that come up. And if you take that out, then what? What other consequences is that going to create? I will say, When you talk about terms, and this is something that, you know, we talk about a lot on this show. So whatever the term, once it becomes politicized, it's hard to undo that, right? And sure. So especially with climate change, just a little bit ago, it was global warming. But then the global warming was something that was like, well, maybe it's not warming like we thought it was warming. So let's call it climate. And that's how some people feel, right? It's like, well, we're just changing the word, even though we're talking. And so that's why I think words are powerful. And we can't just say, let's jump on board, because it's been completely tainted for some people that you can't, because of what it means and what it means to them. And so that's where I would say, you know, I agree with you. We need shorthand is great. If we can have a shorthand term that everyone agrees with and we love, we tried that with In Pursuit of Orphan Excellence when we tried orphan care communities instead of orphanages. It didn't work. Because it's so there, some terms are so loaded in our culture that it's hard to undo that. So that's a side note, but I think it's something that's important, because we need to think through that as we are, because otherwise we're just going to keep yelling at each other, and we're not going to get to the real heart of the issue with people. And that's something that when we want civil conversation, we need to understand that words matter, terms matter, the way we use them matter. And we, in tone matters too, right? So we can say one thing, and you could say climate change in a way that's, you know, tone of it coming into a conversation is completely different than if you say, hey, here's climate change and here's what I mean by it, so that we can have a conversation about it. That's totally different, right? Yeah. And I think people would listen to that versus, you know, yelling at you and telling why you're a bad person because you don't believe in it. You know, like that's not going to work with anybody. We talk about that with any issue. Right. So anyway, and I think we miss the issues when we do that. So I would say, like, in this particular instance, no one's going to argue that, yeah, let's keep polluting Lebanon and let's keep causing cancer. Right. You come in like that, that's silly.
Right. Right.
But especially when you say, and here's all the unintended consequences that we have from it. And that's what people need to realize. Like, this does affect us here, because that's the thing that a lot of people, we know, because we've done work all around the world. When you come back to the U.S. and you say to somebody, oh, you care about this issue in Bangladesh, care about this issue in Lebanon, care about this issue in Russia, people are like, it doesn't affect me. Why would I care about it? Well, it does affect you. And so, you know, this is a global, we are in globalized world. Like, it is, everything is interconnected and it does affect you. And so, you know, if that's all it's going to take to get you to care about something, start caring about these things, because it affects you.
Right. Okay. Well, this is where it's at, man. This is why we have the conversation. And hopefully when people are tuning into a podcast, they know they're going to get more long form. And as we're having this conversation, I don't always title them when I load them up. I'm for sure going to put climate change in the thing, because I don't know. We got to get in there. We got to mix it up. We got to have the conversation.
We got to talk about it.
And speaking of talking about it, let's get to our recommendation for the episode. So you had the three stories looking at alternate economies around Russia, talking about water and, climate change, degradation, whatever you want to say, in Bangladesh.
Stewardship, Brandon.
And yes, how can we steward, including in the Middle East, where there's also a lot of pollution in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. That's affecting other things, but we want to hear from other people. And I think we're going to have one related to Africa here. So Amanda, you're on point. What's the recommendation?
Yes, I'm really excited to share this one. I just realized I put my description on another tab. Let me get it for us. But there is a documentary called The Ants and the Grasshopper, and it is all about, it centers on the story of this woman. Her name is Anita, and let me get our summary here. She is a farmer. She is a Christian. She is Malawian. And so she lives in Southern Africa. She does these gender equity trainings and farming trainings in her community. And so the story starts with her there. And then it talks about her journey as she travels across the U.S. advocating for changes in climate policy and interacting with farmers throughout the U.S. And I really love this story because it tackles some of these big issues that we've been talking about. And what do we do with the perhaps American Christian cultural norm of not buying into the whole climate change agenda. What do we do with that when our brothers and sisters in other places are feeling the impact of whatever terms you want to put on it? The shifts in how weather is happening, the shifts in quality of soil, the shifts in quality of air, those things that are happening over time and are driven by human decisions. What do we do with those pieces, and how do we love our neighbor in that situation? And so, another thing that I really like about this documentary is that it focuses on Anita, and it's not a before and after story. I think as global development practitioners, we spend a lot of time in hearing stories about here's where someone was before, and then intervention from international NGO, and then here's the after. And this story is not about that. This story is about a woman and her community who have their own capabilities and are, if anything, the before and after is what's going to happen in the U.S. We've got the before story now. And it raises a lot of questions about faith and stewardship and how those things align and where there's disconnect in the U.S. I think Pastor Eugene Cho was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he talked about, you know, let this kind of spark some ideas, and it's not a problem if this gets you hot and bothered. Watch this documentary, see what you think. There's some great discussion questions on the website, which we'll put in the show notes, and dig into it. What do you think? Pray about it. What do you think God has to say about these things?
I love it. That's so good, Amanda. I am definitely going to check it out, and it will be linked in the show notes. As I look at your notes, it looks like it's streaming on a few different platforms: Apple, Amazon, Google Play, Vudu. So we will have it linked in the show notes so that people can get connected. Because, look, I mean, we want to be hearing from our brothers and sisters in the Global South. So a sister in Malawi that is loving God and you know, advocating as well as being a farmer, you know, so we definitely value that. That was a 3-1. Phil, any final thoughts, brother?
I just had in my head, as we're talking about all this stuff, I want to encourage everyone listening, as well as I want you folks listening to encourage those in your circles. As we're talking about these issues, whether these issues or other issues, like, make sure you're watching stuff, listening stuff, reading stuff that you know you'll disagree with.
Yeah.
Because it will cause you to make sure you understand why you believe what you believe.
Yeah. That's good.
And it will also, hopefully, it will strengthen your convictions, and it will help you understand how to communicate with others who you know you disagree with. Because that's the only thing that's going to move us forward. And as believers, rather than us just, you know, focusing on what we disagree on, what you're going to find in those things that you know you'll disagree with, there's going to be things in there that you do agree with. And you probably agree with way more things, you know, like I guarantee Brandon and I disagree on a lot of things. I guarantee that Amanda and I disagree on other things, but I guarantee that we agree on way more things than we disagree on. Not even close. And sure. So, you know, that's just the reality. And I think, you know, anybody who's married out there knows that you don't agree with everything that your spouse believes. So let's, you know, my wife believes you don't put the cap back on the toothpaste. So that's just something that, you know, that's a little pet
peeve. Whoa.
Yeah, you know, now we're getting personal. Now she knows. We talk about that all the time. No, but it's a, you know, it's a long running joke in our family. So anyway, but that, the point being, I think it's so important, and that's why we do what we do on this show. I think we get people on here who are thinking well, and, you know, think well, right? I love what, you know, Think Media says, right? It's think well, right? Be curious, do, you know, think well, do good, right? And that's what we want to do. Anyway, that's it.
That's what we want to do. That's the word. Amanda, thanks for jumping in with us today. It was awesome having you on for this conversation.
It was a delight. Thanks, guys.
And to our listeners, may Almighty God, who created us in his own image, grant us grace to fearlessly contend against evil and to make no peace with oppression, and that we may reverently use our freedom and employ it in the maintenance of justice in our communities and among the nations. To the glory of God's holy name, through Jesus Christ our Lord, who lives and reigns with the Father and the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever. Amen. And we will see you guys on the next episode with Gaston Warner. Thank you for joining us on Think Global, Do Justice. If you enjoyed the show, please do 3 things for us. 1, rate and review us online. 2, share it with a friend. And 3,
join us at canopy.international so you can plug into a community of disciples seeking God's justice, mercy, and shalom throughout the world. We'll talk to you soon.